economy is shifting to a conceptual economy, and if innovation is capital, creativity is capital, then, you know, how do we make the logical next step of turning that creativity into viable business opportunities? So it's definitely out there. It's in the ether. In my
yes. So there you go. We have a lot of ground to cover then. Well, anyway, it seems that we've already started on our interview, and we haven't even made like a proper introduction.
Okay, let's do that.
Let's do that.
Hi, this is Carlos Castellanos for DrawnBySuccess.com. Thanks for joining me all. I'm really excited about my next guest in this next interview. She's a highly talented painter and an extraordinarily smart businesswoman, as you'll find out. And I've been following her, I guess, about 2 years now, not in the stalker sense, but following her career online. I first heard about her, I think it was through a video about two and a half years ago. So you're really, really in for a treat today. This interview is going to be phenomenal. I suggest you guys break out your pads and pencils, shut off your phones, shut off anything that might ring, ding, or ping, and focus on this call, because I guarantee you this is going to be a lot of great information that you're going to be able to put into practice like immediately and make your art and creative business a whole lot better. Okay? Introducing Miss Anne Ray. Anne, do you want to tell people a little more about you and how you got started and what are you best known for?
I'm best known for my paintings of wine country and of collectors throughout the United States and Europe, and my work is becoming increasingly collectible. I've been featured in Fortune magazine, the Fine Living Network, the tasting panel, and the Wine Enthusiast. For xenophiles out there, they'll recognize those publications. And I was mentored by Wayne Thiebaud and Gregory Condos. For those who don't know who Wayne Thiebaud is, he's on par with Andy Warhol, and his canvases go for millions. And he advised me to quit my day job, and then, with really no clear or specific direction, because he's primarily an academic before he became so famous. So unlike most artists, I actually wrote a business plan and a marketing plan before I launched my business. And I should also say I did it with, you know, only so much insider knowledge about how to write a business plan or a marketing plan. So I think I consider myself a fine artist and an entrepreneur. I think that's how I would introduce myself.
And a fine introduction it is. Okay, so you mentioned putting together a business plan, and I would imagine that a lot of artists would probably shudder and go into shock at the mere sounds of those words. How extensive of a business plan are we talking about?
I really looked at it, the writing my business plan and my marketing plan, as a creative process. So it really wasn't scary or foreign to me. I made this up, by the way, so I don't, it's no formal strategy that I'm about to describe, but I just sat with a friend and I listed all the ways I could possibly make a living as a painter with certain criteria. You know, I didn't want to be an illustrator. I wanted to be a fine artist, and I wanted to make money.
Right.
And so I listed all the ideas I could possibly conceive of without editing, without negating any ideas, anything that came to mind, which is often referred to as a blue sky session. And then I ranked each idea based on different criteria on a scale of 1 to 3. And those criteria were 3 simple things. What was the likely profitability of that idea? Did I know anyone? Did I have any connections that would help me launch that particular idea? And did I have any experience with that particular idea? And so then I basically sorted those ideas and scored them, and I mushed them together and came up with my initial business model and marketing plan. And it's very simple. And since then, I've actually shifted my marketing strategies quite dramatically, but, well, not quite dramatically, dramatically enough that it's not really the same. That's how I did it. I have a brother who's the dean of a business school. He was useless. and I have a sister who's a self-made multimillionaire, and she was also equally useless. So I think what happens is a lot of people put business and art in the same sentence, and they have a brain freeze. And it's silly, really, because art is a huge business and a
very
profitable one.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, I think when artists think about the business aspect of what they do, I think a tendency is to think that it needs to be some kind of businessy-oriented, structural kind of thing, where, as you mentioned, it really is. I mean, you can make it up. It can be as simple. I mean, I've used a simple mind map. It's basically just figuring out where you're going, who your market is, how you're going to reach that market, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be like some kind of daunting 20-page text file.
Yeah, I mean, when I work with artist clients, we actually build a kind of a bare-bones project plan, whereby we decide what the goal is, and the goal itself has to meet specific criteria. And then really it's the artist who has to do it. I'm not going to do it for them, where they actually figure out, okay, well, what milestones need to be met in order for this goal to become reality? And if these are the milestones that have to be met, then what actions do I need to take to get there? And so it's basically, you know, they've got a roadmap right there.
Right.
To get from point A to point B. And that's because in a previous life, when I was working away in a cubicle, I was a project management consultant. So I got a pretty good understanding of how to take a big project or an idea and break it down into bite-sized chunks.
That's really important to do.
Yeah, it's really important to do, because otherwise you waste time, you get overwhelmed, and it takes much longer than it needs to get to your success. So, yeah, I'm quite left brain and right brain when it comes to that kind of thing.
There really doesn't seem to be a lot of people talking about, you know, the business end of creativity. And that's really where I like to focus on, and I know that's an area that you're getting into with your consulting and your coaching. I'm thinking maybe there's a lot of people out there that don't talk about it because maybe the majority of the artists don't want to listen to it and aren't interested in it. But I can't imagine that you and I are the only ones.
We're definitely not the only ones. I mean, anyone who wants to earn a living in their creative pursuit needs to understand the business side of things. So, yeah, there's a huge audience for it. As a matter of fact, UC Berkeley contacted me 2 weeks ago and asked if I would teach my Artists Who Thrive seminars and at UC Berkeley, and they plan to broadcast them throughout the whole UC system. So that's telling you something.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's a great opportunity for those graduates.
So it's definitely information that people are hungry for. There's absolutely no doubt. And actually, the dean of the business school at Mills, which is a well-respected college here in Northern California, she actually approached me and said, you know, at some point we want to develop an MBA program for the arts, and we'd like to know if you'd help us pull the curriculum together. So I think the universities out there are understanding that the economy is shifting to a conceptual economy.
One of the things that I found really interesting in your story was how you just kind of got fed up with being that 9-to-5-er.
I wish it was 9-to-5. That would have been great.
Longer than that. But, you know, the typical 9 to, let's say, 8, or not maybe 9 to 9.
Yeah.
But, well, you got really frustrated with that and just kind of decided, you know what, this is what I want to do, and you went for it. What kind of criteria did you yourself were you looking at?
You mean what pushed me over the edge?
Well, okay, well, yeah, what pushed you over the edge, and then what, you know, in structuring your own game plan for making your painting career work, you know, what kind of things were you looking at that needed to happen so that you felt that you were, you know, that you were making inroads and that you knew that you were staying on track?
So I think this is a really important question, what you're asking here, because you're asking, you know, what did I need to have in place? Here's the truth. I did not know what needed to be in place. And you don't really know until you get into it. I just made a decision that I was done and that I wanted to not leave this life without giving my dream its very best shot. And my dream was to paint for a living and live in San Francisco. That's what I wanted. The two are not necessarily compatible in most people's practical mind, but that's really what I wanted. And what drove that, I would say, were two things. I had Wayne Thiebaud's encouragement. So if Wayne says you can paint, well then you can paint. And so that instilled me with confidence to move forward. So that was one thing. And the second thing was I was working away in a cubicle with a woman who's the same age as me, and we would whine and complain about working in a cubicle. We were both project management consultants. And her name was Angela, and she was just recovering from stage 4 breast cancer. She'd also, remarkably, this woman had also almost been killed once by an intruder in her home. So she'd had two brushes with death. And I thought, what am I doing sitting in this cubicle, bitching and moaning about how much I hate it, without giving everything I've got to making the life that I want happen? And I'd look at Angela and think, you know, she's got support. I mean, she could. Why is she here? And so, unbeknownst to Angela, she really inspired me to get a move on it, because we're all going out, right? We're all leaving.
Right, sure.
So we only have we have what we have. We don't even know what that is. We don't even know how much time we have. So what are we doing sitting here if we're not happy? So I really didn't know how to go about it. Wayne was no help. My brother was no help. My sister was no help. When it came to the how, that was your initial question, like how, I just knew I wanted to. And then I just figured, you know, I'd figure it out. Other people figured it out. I can figure it out. And so I kind of joke when I work with my artist clients, and I say, damn, I really wish I had one of me when I was trying to, you know, create a career in fine art, because there wasn't anybody. And that was actually one of the reasons why I decided to do it part-time, because I think that there's a tremendous need for resources and guidance and, you know, and just basic methodology of how you build a business as a fine artist. It's clearly a need. As you know, as I mentioned earlier, UC Berkeley just contacted me 2 weeks ago to teach my seminars. So I know I'm not the only one who wants to do this. It's everywhere.
Although
everywhere.
It may feel like that sometimes.
It does sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it felt like that. It did feel like that when I first got started and I was on my own, definitely.
Yeah,
anyway,
you know,
went off
a
little
of
tangent there, but I had to tell you that part.
No, that's good. That's good. That's precisely what it takes. And I think, you know, also like when I started, I didn't know any better. So, you know, I just did what I wanted to do and I did it. I didn't realize that, you know, I could fall flat on my face and, you know,
right.
Look stupid. I actually have more problems now than I did, you know, 25, 26 years ago when I first started. I actually have encounter more problems now mentally with myself when I try to do something new, because I have a lot of hang-ups about, you know, failing, or, you know, I'm not qualified, or, you know what I mean? Where when I started, I didn't have any of those hang-ups.
Right.
So sometimes too much information can kind of actually work against you.
Yeah, it can. And actually, the other thing is, it's different for everyone. You know, it's depending on, you know, my process worked for me. And, you know, when I'm working with, let's say, a painter in Australia or a jeweler in San Francisco, their process, their mindset is completely different. It's going to be what it's going to be for you. I think it goes back to just making that decision. And then, yeah, if you're going to allow the noise of doubt and insecurity to get in the way, then you're not going to do very well at anything. That's a given.
I think I had read somewhere that when you started, you were looking at your options, right? How did you go about selecting the market of vineyards and wineries?
Well, really easy. There's three components. When people travel, they buy art, generally. People who are buying wine have disposable income and are predisposed to collecting. Not all of them, but, you know, a certain segment. And last but not least, when people drink, they buy stuff. So
when people buy stuff, they drink.
They buy stuff when they drink. That's why it's served at every art reception you go to and every auction you go to. People drink and their pockets get looser.
They get all loose and all their wallets come out.
That's right. That was the business side of things. Actually, the creative side of things is really basic. I have a friend whose family owns a organic vineyard, and I was just, you know, really my subject is not vineyards. Vineyards at all. It's really color and it's ambient light that is the color inspired by ambient light. Okay, so that's any natural landscape. I find vineyards interesting because of the architectural elements of the rows. It's the same reason I find farmland interesting. And I had a friend who owned this vineyard, and it also had an alfalfa field and a creek. And so I started painting her farm and her vineyard. And then I noticed of that body of work, the vineyard paintings tended to sell. So if I'm only concerned about being inspired by natural light, then it doesn't matter to me one way or the other if it's a vineyard or if it's something in the surrounding landscape here in the Presidio of San Francisco. That was the creative evolution.
Right. So, I mean, you found something that you wanted to create, the kind of work that you wanted to work in, and then you found a market that would work together with that was actually, you know, an affluent market as well. So, I mean, it allows you to do what you want to do at the same time, make the money that you need to lead a comfortable life and continue to pursue the kind of work that you love.
Right. So it's just dovetailed together nicely. Okay. And the other thing is that people, you know, I know a lot of winemakers and the people in the wine industry, in the hospitality industry, because that's essentially the industry I work in, it's fun. People are there to enjoy life, eat well, drink well, socialize. Winemakers are very passionate individuals. They're up against some of the same odds that painters are. And so we sort of have a natural synergy.
So I guess a lot of the similarities, looking at it from the surface, would be that it's something that people buy not because they necessarily need. It's something that they want or they desire, whatever, you know, if it's a wine or if it's a particular type of wine from a certain area, they buy for the same reasons they buy your painting. It's
right.
Kind of an impulse, something that they feel a bond with, or they feel good about, it makes them feel good.
Yeah, they have an emotional response, and it's a way for them to remember or celebrate a lifestyle or a memory. It's a luxury item. It's like diamonds or fast, you know, fancy cars or vacation homes. It's all in the same category of luxury. I'm in the luxury business.
What's interesting to me about that is that, you know, a lot of times from a marketing standpoint, you find you're trying to find where there is a need, and then you fill that need with your paintings and the kind of thing that you're doing. It's hard to pin a need because it's like you say, it's a luxury item. I mean, it's easy enough to find someone with a need for something and then fill that need. Like if you're in a commercial art industry or something, or you're doing, you know, car illustrations or whatever. But for what you do, how do you go about finding your clients, finding the people that have that desire to have what you want, but they don't necessarily have a need for it?
Well, I think they do have a need. I have a need for the diamond ring that's on my finger.
so it's an emotional need.
I love my ring. I absolutely
right.
love my ring. Do I need this ring? I really don't need this ring, but I love this ring. Love that it sparkles. when I'm driving in the car. I look at the spray of rainbows it's shooting. I love it. I love it. And it has, obviously, it has an emotional, it has emotional meaning to me, too. So it's the same.
Yeah, so that's really what we're getting at, is that it's really, there's not a need in the sense that I need this to live necessarily, but there's an emotional need that
right.
you want to fulfill, and it makes you feel a certain way. It's like maybe when you drive, you know, someone who might drive a $300,000 car versus an $18,000 car. You know,
right.
you don't need to have a $300,000 car. It's going to get you to the same place, but you have that need of either prestige, or it makes you feel good, or, you know, it symbolizes something more than just the product itself.
Yeah. Yes, it symbolizes something more. It has deeper meaning. It has far deeper meaning than it as an object in itself. I mean, if you looked around your room, I'm sure you can count a number of things, more things you don't need than you do need that you possess.
My dog just walked into my studio. I don't need my dog, but...
You don't need your dog. You don't have your dog.
Well, I'd be hard-pressed to get rid of him, though.
Right. But do you have to have it? Do people have to have pets? I mean, there are some pet-crazed people who would argue with me. But you don't have to have a pet. You don't have to have children. Right? I mean,
absolutely.
Overall, so I think that this is a good point, because you can get stuck if you think you've got to find a need like shelter and food, you know, sort of those, you know, hierarchy of needs. If you have to fit into the first hierarchy with your art, you're going to be hard pressed
right.
to justify the need in that regard. You know, everyone's different. The luxury market, which is the market that I'm in, there's very distinct and very specific strategies that you have to use in order to be successful, and you have to understand the current luxury market, because it shifted since the recession dramatically. So there are elements of this current luxury market that are different than what was in play, let's say, 3 or 4 years ago. The good news is I actually just went to a presentation where current luxury marketing research was discussed. And in terms of the category of art, that's actually gone up. So art sales have actually increased during the recession. And that's because the luxury market has shifted towards objects or experiences that have more meaning. So the conspicuous consumption of, let's say, a Rolex watch or, you know, heavily branded, that's actually gone down. It's actually declined, but art has increased.
So people are looking more for, or really purchasing more of an experience and a feeling.
Well, also a connection, too. They're looking for connection. People are just looking for things with more meaning. And fine art has meaning. Doesn't have the same piece, does not have, like, the fine art that's on my wall may not have meaning to you, but has meaning to me, right? And vice versa.
Right.
So, yeah, meaning is very, very important.
Yeah, and that, the whole reason why I was asking is because artists in general, and I think that crosses, it's across board between fine artists, commercial artists, there's always this problem trying to define the value of what you're doing.
You know, one of the things that I have to work with artists on is understanding what their specific unique value proposition is. We look at, for example, let's look at Andy Warhol. Andy Warhol's a great example. What was Andy Warhol's unique value proposition? And a lot of people cannot come up with it, but he had a very clear value proposition that catapulted him to fame and fortune. He was a shameless self-promoter, by the way. Completely admire. His unique value proposition was that he aligned with celebrity, and he celebrated their fame. And then he created a PR machine around that, around his happenings. And of course, then celebrities purchased, and then the admirers of the celebrities purchased. And yes, he did other work that was also a significant commentary on pop culture, which was his initial recognition, came from that. But then how he took it a step further, how he really, really gained ground, was the unique value proposition of celebrating celebrity and plugging into the current culture and feeding it back to us. So it's a great, that's an example of his value proposition. So that had little really to do, it had something to do with emotion, but more to do with that particular value proposition. That's one example. So that, and it really, it has the more value is going to come from plugging into people's passion. For example, people who are really into celebrities are really into celebrities. People who are really into wine, let me tell you, they're really into wine. So that's also a helpful perspective, you know, to be mindful of what passion are you plugging into.
And part of your painting outdoors is that you actually wanted to paint outdoors as well. I mean, you didn't want to be stuck in the studio, or you wanted to be outside. And
yeah, I'm inspired by nature, and I think that there's just a huge physical, emotional, spiritual benefit from spending time in nature for long periods of time. I think that it's very healing, it's tranquil, and for me, there's nothing more inspiring than nature. They say art imitates nature, right? So that's,
yep, absolutely.
That's why I wanted to be where I am. I also paint in my studio. I mean, I do the larger canvases in my studio.
I think it's kind of cool how you're able to go out there and sit down there in the middle of the vineyard and painting away.
Well, that the production team made that really cool. Hair and makeup. And it's not really that pretty when I'm out there sweating my butt off, let me tell you.
Sweating, getting bitten up by gnats. And
yeah, no, it's really hot. It's very hot right now.
It's funny.
But I'm glad I projected that image.
Yeah, you did. If you put out a video out there where you're like sweating and, you know, you're exhausted, you're smudging everything and gnats are like bothering, it, the romance is gone at that point. So.
Yeah, can't show that.
It's all in the presentation.
Perception is reality.
Exactly. So, okay, so let's back up a little bit. Again, you know, you chose the vineyards and the winery and because there was a good opportunity there to create a partnership with the wineries that was kind of synergistic. And how did you go about approaching them? I mean, because at this point, you know, they haven't worked with you. You're getting some paintings together. You've got this concept of approaching them. How did you do that, and what was your first step?
Well, I should say that I actually don't work with wineries directly anymore. That's what I used to do, but that is how I got started, and that was an important part of developing my business. I had to do cold calling, which I wouldn't, you know, since I launched my business, I've actually worked with a sales consultant and a very specific sales approach, which is not very salesy.
Mm-hmm.
And had I had that sales training, in the beginning, it would have been a lot easier road. But so anyway, I didn't know any different. So I cold called wineries and I wrote them emails. Two approaches I don't recommend, but I got and also referrals. I mean, I just told people what I was doing and they made introductions. And then I got press, and then that press gave me credibility and visibility, and that helped. So, I just tried what I thought would work based on my experience. And as I said, you know, I wish I would have had some training because it would have been a lot less painful, but that's what I did.
But it worked. It got you to where you needed to.
Who cares, right? It worked.
Yeah, it worked. And I think that's the whole point, that, you know, there is one way of doing it for everybody that's going to fit everyone's personality, everyone's style, everyone's market. So it's really a matter of just getting out there and just doing it. I mean, I think the process of just getting out there and doing anything gets you a whole lot closer than sitting back and thinking about how
Absolutely.
To do something forever.
Absolutely. You're going to learn, you make the worst mistakes, and that's where you'll find your biggest lesson.
Yeah, in that process is where you find the answers. Even if you're sitting back and trying to study everything and trying to get everything lined up and perfect, unless you get out there and start making those contacts or approaching people, you're not going to have the confidence to really know whether it's going to work or not anyway.
Right. I would say this, though, that you have to really understand your value before you can convince anyone else of it. And that's important.
So, yes, I agree. I think it's important to figure out what it is that you want, what it is that you want to project, what's important to you, and then try to marry that with something that's going to work.
Right. I mean, bottom line, if you want to get paid, right, you want to exchange money for what you do, what is it that you're offering in exchange for that money? Why should they give it to you? You have to have a clear understanding of that. I think that lack of understanding is what makes artists very hesitant to sell, not all artists.
Now you've consulted with other painters and artists in regards to their business and getting them off the ground. What do you see as a major obstacle for them, for a lot of the people that you see, when they come to you, that really is kind of holding them back? I mean, is it something that they just want to do a particular kind of painting and without any regard to, you know, how it fits into the marketplace or who might want to buy that or who they're speaking to? Or from a fine art standpoint, how important is that?
It's very important. It's really important. And I work with I don't work with just painters. I work with, I have a fashion designer, a jeweler, illustrator, photographer, mixed media artist. I have a musician who actually just applied for my program. They come from all different walks of life, levels of experience, and perspectives. So there's no one answer, but I could say the place that we always start is understanding why you want to do this. Why do you want to do this versus something, you know, some other way of making a living? Because you have to feel really passionate about this pursuit to get you through. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You really have to want this. You have to want it pretty bad because you're going to have to weather some bumps. So that's where we have to start to figure out how passionate these people are. And then it's a matter of understanding, well, why is it that you want to do this? I mean, I don't know. I know why I want to paint and why I enjoy my particular approach, but that's got nothing to do with you or someone else, right? So you have to understand why you want to do this. And then it's understanding, okay, well, now what's your unique value proposition? So for each artist that I work with, it's different. You know, one artist I have, she uses really bright, playful forms and colors, and she recycles, everything is recycled. So her work particularly is particularly appealing in children's environments. So she is doing a huge. When I started working with her, she was working full time. Now she's quit her job. She's represented by 6 galleries, and she's working on a custom commission for an innovative hospital. And they've given her like a 90-foot wall to create this mixed media piece. But so her value is, you know, I mentioned the audience, which is not always, but often children or people who enjoy playful, lighthearted forms, and the fact that it's all green. She's not going and buying stuff to make her mixed media installations. So that's her. You know, everybody's different. It's like any business. I mean, you could just look at all the businesses that are out there in the world. There's plenty to go around. You just have to understand what your value is, be willing and able to articulate it, and articulate it to the correct target audience. As I mentioned, I've changed my strategy. I thought my audience was wineries. It's really not wineries. And that was a hard lesson, by the way. It's really, my audience is really the individual collectors and the collectors of a certain demographic and income range. So I had to shift things. And that's been much more profitable.
So what are you doing now that's different?
I was actually, I'm sure you've heard of the movie The Secret.
Yes.
Okay, so the gentleman who's sort of the host or MC of The Secret, the older gentleman with white hair.
Oh, Robert Proctor.
Bob Proctor, okay. So
right,
I
Bob
was
Proctor.
Flown, Bob Proctor. So I was flown right. to Toronto to paint his garden for him. I was painting vineyards. So, again, my subject's really just, you know, natural landscape. So,
right.
Yeah, I've done that. And I have to say, it was Bob who counseled me to shift my my marketing focus away from the wineries and towards individual collectors. And I was there for a few days, and we actually had sat down over dinner and talked about it. So I was very thankful because Bob has coached the likes of Ellen DeGeneres and her whole production team to beat Oprah Winfrey's ratings, and she did. And Bob coached them, so he was really helpful. I couldn't process what he was advising me initially, and then eventually I did, and it's really starting to take off what I'm doing now.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to, you know, that when, because I try to surround myself with people that I don't normally find in the cartooning industry or the illustration industry. I usually really go way out of my way to expose myself to other people, you know, that are really almost not really entirely different industries. Because I think it gives you a whole new different outlook on and perspective on what you do, you know, having their view of it. And I think that's what you might have experienced with Bob Proctor, is that, you know, he was able to look at what you do from a different point of view and open up a whole new door or series of new doors for you that you probably wouldn't have seen yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. The power of the idea. I mean, I'm very thankful that I had an opportunity to meet him and, you know, become friends with him and his wife. It was huge. It was absolutely huge. It was probably as significant as my meeting Wayne Thiebaud. It helped me see it. It helped me think bigger. That's another thing I notice with a lot of artists that I work with, is that a lot of times I'm just coaching them to think bigger.
Yeah, I find illustrators or artists in general, really, I sense this resistance of investing in themselves, in the sense that, you know, if they have to go somewhere to get some information, if there's a conference or something, a lot of them will sit back and think you'll ever have it local because, you know, I don't want to spend the money on, you know, the airplane and, you know, the hotel room. It gets expensive, which I understand. People, you know, are strapped for money sometimes. But, you know, I see a lot of friends that won't think twice about investing $500 on a new iPad. You know what I mean? But they won't spend, you know, a couple of $100 to go get some information that can actually make them money. Not that you can't make money with an iPad, but, you know, it's just a lot of them don't see the value in acquiring that knowledge that someone else has already acquired for you and shaving off years.
Years of trial and tribulation. When I say I really wish I had one of me when I started, because someone, you know, someone like who had gone through the experiences and learned the very expensive lessons I've had to learn and save me that time and that money. I mean, I've definitely made expensive mistakes. And I don't think you should evaluate carefully what kind of advice and help you're investing in. But, I mean, you know, your education doesn't stop after you've graduated. It just doesn't. You have to be current, and you have to get help. And no one is successful by themselves. There's no way. It just doesn't work that way. I work with consultants all the time. As I mentioned earlier, I'm a sales consultant. Had a huge impact on my business so far. Huge.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I know for me personally, mentors that I have, mentors that I get together with on a monthly basis. From my experience, and this isn't going to hold true for everyone, but from my experience, some of these people that take the time to mentor me and that I actually pay to have their time, because I respect their knowledge and I respect their time and their experience. So it's worth it for me to pay them. But there are times when, you know, there's just like, it's mostly like hang-ups that I have or roadblocks that I have in my own head about certain things when they're telling me something, where, you know, I just don't get it, I just don't understand it. And then maybe like 2 months down the road, all of a sudden it just clicks and that door opens. And all of a sudden it's like a light bulb goes off. And you realize, what the hell was I thinking before that I couldn't see this? And that one tidbit of information that they've been telling you all along that you didn't figure out where that piece went in your life, all of a sudden it just kind of clicks. And it makes a world of difference in all of your opportunities, everything that you're doing. It's just really amazing, and people, unless they experience that, don't really realize how impactful that can be on your life.
That's what happened with Bob. I mean, when he was direction. I was so invested, I was still invested in my idea of working with the wineries. And so I just was not, I wasn't open, I wasn't receptive. And then what happened is I had I had binding legal contracts with two wineries. And I was smart about it. I had a legal contract. Two of them in a row welched on me, just walked away, left me in a tailspin. And so I thought, okay, well, this is a sign. Something has got to change. I don't want to be left vulnerable like this anymore. And frankly, these folks are kind of becoming a pain in the butt. So then when I just sat quietly and frankly sat with my full dissatisfaction, I was able to, you know, reconsider what Bob had advised me and then think about what's the next step to take? What's the logical next step to take? If I embrace his advice and reposition myself, you know, what do I do next? So anyway, and I worked with people too, and I worked with consultants and spoke with more people to sort of reposition myself and rebrand myself. I actually, you know, hired a proper graphic designer and, you know, just took the whole thing very seriously. And Bob told me, you know, you could be a very wealthy woman and not too long, not too short a time.
Right.
So, yeah, you got to get help. Just like you go to school and, you know, learn illustration techniques or painting techniques or any of color theory. All of those, you know, you're going to make the same investment in understanding business and learning how to shape and build a business. So,
yeah, I think, too, for, you know, for artists, I think, well, for me personally, I'm not going to put a whole bunch of people in the same egg basket as me. But for me, you know, when I learn something new, whether it's technique-wise or, you know, having to do with my illustration process, it's all valuable because any time that you invest in yourself in any capacity, it's great. But what I found that, you know, at a certain point, you know, the return on investment of putting in time and learning something new, like, you know, because I've been doing this for like 25 years, is not to say I can't learn anything new. In regards to cartooning and illustration, I certainly can. But the pieces that I choose to invest in, into learning new techniques or a new way of illustrating what I do, has less return on investment if I invest in the marketing side or the business side of what I do. Because I can, 'cause now that I've got the experience on both sides, I can see where if I take that same amount of time and resources and put it into something that's in marketing or expanding my view of what I do, the return on investment is way higher on that side than it is on purchasing a new tablet or learning how to use a new tool or something like that.
I can think of an example of somebody in my life who just, you know, purchased this glass blower and he purchased equipment for that, but he will not invest in an e-commerce site. He's got a website. It's, you know, so-so. Needs to, you know, he's not going to be able to sell anything off a website. You can only display your work. So,
right.
I've tried to convince him that, yes, there's an initial investment in an e-commerce site, but if you do it right, and only if you do it right, it will pay for itself many times over, and you can buy oodles of equipment. But that's not the first place he went with his funds. He went with equipment.
Right.
But logically, I mean, you want to go where? Want to go to the place? What's going to increase your revenue?
Right.
Once you've went, like you said, you know, you've been, after 20, 25 years of illustration, you have the skill. You have illustration skills. You'll benefit from training, but they're not going to be modified dramatically. The better bet at this point is to how do you increase your revenue and maybe license, you know, increase your licensing and yeah.
So, yeah, it's just, you know, weird to me that a lot of, you know, artists don't think in terms of, I mean, I get it because, you know, I was there too. You know, the buying the stuff and doing the thing is what we love. I mean, that's why we do it, right? I mean, because we love the whole process. And at a certain point, you need to really kind of force yourself to step back away from that a little bit and develop those other areas. You know, it's funny. I got an email about a week and a half ago. And I get these a lot because people gonna get pissed off at me a little bit. You know, because you know, I talk, you know, on Drawn by Success, I talk a lot about marketing, and the word money gets thrown around quite a bit. And someone had emailed me saying that, you know, that I don't really love what I do anymore. I just do everything for the money. And you know, and I kind of, you know, yeah.
I love what I do, and I love getting paid for it.
Well, you know, my thing is, you know, when I got it, because I hear that a lot from people sometimes when they approach me, and they're typically people that need, that aren't doing very well, you know, and won't make the investment of their time. But what happens was I sat back and just kind of thought about it, you know, and the thing is that, quite honestly, I mean, if you and I are going to be really honest, Ann, I'm not really good for much else. You know, I'm like totally unemployable, you know what I mean? I don't work good, you know, I can't go to somewhere and just kind of get a job. So, you know, this is what I do. This is my passion. This is all I've ever known. So the reason why I'm so adamant about, you know, creating and following and discovering new opportunities and investing yourself to find those new opportunities is because I'm so passionate about what I do. I want to be able to continue doing it. If I can't make money and provide for my family, I can't continue doing this. I mean, there is no bigger motivation for me than continue doing this. So I have to make money at it.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of people with money issues, and I don't frankly want to even be in the same room with that, because I can't. I always tell artists that I'm working with, look, I'm not a therapist. I can't delve into your subconscious motivations. I'm just going to call it as I see it. And if you've got a huge conflict around money, then what are we doing?
You're not going to help them. You can't help them.
I mean, I don't want to waste your money, because you have to be. But not, I really don't encounter artists who are not interested in money. They're absolutely interested in earning a living. And I always say, you know, one of the most inspiring things that can happen for me is I gain a new commission. I sell a painting. Because the feedback I get from my collectors is so positive and so affirming that I want to go do more. I absolutely love it. I feel like I get paid twice. I get paid in the form of American Express, Visa, MasterCard. And then I get paid from the feedback, which is you know, thank you notes and invitations to dinner and referrals to other collectors. And, you know, that's a wonderful way to make a living.
There really is no greater joy for me than to, you know, that to get well compensated for the things that I do. Because to me, it's, you know, it's playtime for me. It's my mom always kids that, you know, now I get paid to do what I used to get in trouble for doing in the back of math class in third grade.
Yes.
You know, and it is. It's the exact same thing I used to do in third grade. I get the same joy. But you know, it's that same joy. It's the same level of joy of being able to do that. You do it because you love it. And now, you know, you can, what better feeling is there than just be able to do it and be able to make your living at it? On the topic of money and being able to feel comfortable charging for the work that you do and your experience, how do you determine value for what you do, for your paintings, for your artwork?
You know, well, at this point, how I arrived at value initially is different from now. So initially, I just took my work to various gallery owners, and I got kind of an average appraisal, and then I used that to set my prices initially, and then I inched them up over time. And I also provide, my prices are basically based on size of the canvas, because collectors are, you know, it's really hard to explain to a collector why this piece that's this size, that's a smaller size, is valued higher than this other piece that's a larger size. Like it or not, that's how we perceive value. And not all, some collectors are quite sophisticated and have in-depth collections, and some of my collectors are new. So I don't need to confuse them. So that's how I do it. I basically base it on size, and then they can choose what they want.
Okay.
Choose based on their budget.
Okay. Yeah, because from the fine art standpoint, I wasn't familiar with how you arrive at, you know, a value for a piece. So that's.
You can go to galleries and you can see. You can actually just, you know, you have to look at the market like you would any, like when you're going to sell a car, right? You look at, okay, my car's in this condition and it's got this many miles and this is the make of the car and it's whatever, you know, this is the model. And you do it, or when you're selling a house, you do a comparative analysis. And that's, if you need help doing that, then you can, if you have a relationship with a gallery or an art consultant, they can be very helpful in providing specific feedback. But I wouldn't get one person's opinion. I'd get several people's opinion.
Right. Now, you get quite a bit of press. So if you're using press to your advantage and you had done this piece for Bob Proctor, you know, celebrity kind of clientele kind of eventually ends up making a difference in that as well, I would imagine. The kind of press you're getting, the kind of notoriety you're getting, and you start developing a certain clientele, those prices start going up, I would imagine.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, as the demand, like any market, as demand increases, the prices go up.
Now, are you mostly selling like originals, or do you sell a lot of prints of your work?
I sell both. I sell reproductions, I sell prints, and I sell originals. Mostly.
Which one is the one that's got the biggest growth for you?
Right now, it's original.
Anne, thanks again for coming on, and I want to be respectful of your time as well, because I'm sure you have some painting to do.
I have a lot of stuff to do. A whole lot of stuff to do, but who doesn't? I'm happy to be doing it.
It really was a pleasure for me, and I'd love to do it again sometime.
You're very welcome.
Where can people get more information from you if they wanted to learn more about either your paintings or your coaching and consulting?
If they want to learn more about my paintings, they can go to annrea.com, and that's spelled annrea.com. But for my coaching and consulting and my workshops, I do these on a limited basis, and coaching is by application only, unless it's our coaching is by application on as-needed consultations do not require an application. That information is at Artists Who Thrive, and that's artists, plural, A-R-T-I-S-T-S, W-O-H, Thrive, thrive.com. And you can, if you would place a link, that'd be great.
Yep, and, we'll definitely have a link.
And put up a weekly there's also opportunity to sign up for a weekly newsletter. I blog once a week about current issues that my artist clients are grappling with. So that's another resource for people.
And you just started a Thriving Artist Profile series, interview series, right?
I did. I just decided that I was writing these, you know, posts about issues and challenges, and I wanted to focus on the fact that it's not all issues and challenges, that there are artists who are successful and who have learned valuable lessons. And so I decided to profile my artist clients. So these will be people that I've actually coached and the lessons that they've learned. I'm actually planning on writing a book on marketing fine art, and this is one of the reasons I'm doing this. I want to collect real-life examples, and I think that'll provide a valuable resource. So that's sort of my end game with all this.
Fantastic. That's the entrepreneurial spirit in you. That's what first drew me to you when I first read your story.
Well, it's fun. It's, you know, and one thing that I think artists should understand is there are a lot of very successful entrepreneurial artists who are critically acclaimed and who are making a lot of money, and they do exist. And so if I could part with one thought, is to be mindful about the starving artist or struggling artist stereotype. It's not necessarily true. I know plenty of artists who don't fit that category at all.
Yeah, I remember reading that you had mentioned once that artists, they're among the lowest paid and also the highest paid. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of just dependent on you where you want to fit in there.
Yeah, so
which
pick
I love. Yeah, exactly. You know, there's a whole wide spectrum there. So I mean, it's really up to you to figure out, you know, where you want to be, not where you are. We're not where you fit in there. Where do you want to fit in there? Because a lot of it is determined by what you do and the choices that one makes as an artist. You know, if you want to just look at your work and look at it only one way and limit yourself to the possibilities, then, you know, you're going to limit your opportunities. If you're going to...
Right, more opportunity now than there ever was. Even
absolutely.
Even in this current economy, like I said, the luxury marketing research that was presented to me just last week or 2 weeks ago was that in the category of luxury, art is the one category that's actually gone up. And the internet is your friend. You can find collectors and you can find an audience like you never could before. That's another huge advantage that artists have now that they didn't have before. If you're stuck in the mode of I have to be represented by a single gallery and I can't possibly sell my work online, well, then you'd forego that opportunity. But it's definitely better now than it was, much easier than it was.
Well, it gets back to what you were saying before, that you really have to know why you do the art that you do and really, you know, the bigger purpose behind it, and then figure out, you know, who's a good fit. And like you said, on the internet, it's easy to find huge groups of different types of people that are into different types of things on the internet. It's very easy to find those forums and those groups and those communities that you can just kind of tap into.
It's so, so true. And, you know, say is, you know, you don't have to sell it. You don't have to be in business as an artist. You can make a decision, and it's a perfectly respectable decision to make, to decide you don't want to sell your work. So if you're not going to, you know, one of the questions, I know we're kind of winding down, but one of the questions that I always ask artists is, you know, what's your attitude about business and about marketing? And if they come back and say, oh, I really don't like it, I wish someone else would do it for me, then I will say, well, let's say you're a painter, and if I asked you that question about painting and you came back and said, oh, I don't really like it, I wish someone else would do it, how good are you going to be at it?
Right.
So if you're going to sell, you're in business. You are in business. So if you don't want to be, I think that's cool.
Right.
But if you're going to be, at least be conscious about it, and decide that you're going to be good at it, and decide to gather the resources and the mentors and the whatever it is you need to succeed in the business side of it, or just don't go there. Find another
right.
way to earn revenue. That's fine.
Yeah, it's just that if you decide that, you know, because a lot of people will say, you know, I'm an artist, I want to be an artist, but then they don't want to accept the other side of that coin. You know, is that you have to realize that if you want to do this and you want to be able to succeed, you say you're going to be able to succeed, you have to be able to, you know, take the whole thing, because
yeah.
one isn't going to happen without the other. It just isn't.
Well, yeah, the success, the freedom of being an artist and the success in business comes from taking complete responsibility for everything. There's no one coming to save you. No one gets discovered. I've had a lovely national press, but no one discovered me. It was all through hard work and persistence, and relentless persistence, actually.
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, we get the same thing with the comic strip. We, you know, we usually have like 4 to 5 stories that'll come out nationwide or something about the comic strip or something. And people will say, well, you know, you get all this press. And the press comes because we sit down and say, okay, these are some good storylines that are interesting to us that we want to write about. And then we'll say, okay, out of these, which ones will get people's attention in the press? I mean, we have to consciously do it. I mean, a lot of people will hear that and say, oh my God, you're a comic strip whore, you know. You know what I mean?
That's right, baby.
But you have to come up with angles, you know, in your storylines and the things that you're doing,
yeah.
to generate press every now and then, to keep your name out there, and to keep those stories coming along and making sure that people don't forget who you are and what you're doing, and connecting with different that's why we reach out and we connect with different organizations and sometimes partner up with them in certain storylines. But those are all conscious decisions that you make along the way to keep that marketing machine, so to speak, primed and continually moving forward. And that's just something that you need to do.
Right. Well, you're working a plan, planned action. It's always, I always tell artists that I'm working with, you have it's planned action. The success is no accident. Getting paid is no accident. It's through your planned action and having a goal that you're planning to achieve. So it's, yeah, I could go on all day. And that was my day. But as you can tell, it's one of my favorite subjects. I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I know.
Forever.
And thanks again.
I'm very passionate about it. So.
Yeah, we are passionate about it, and because we know it's important. And thanks again for being on. I look forward to seeing what else you have developing around the corner. Please stay in touch.
Okay, you too. All right,
thanks
so
Ann.
Much. Have a great
All right.
day.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Until next time, peace out. Have a good time and work hard. Work your passion. Later. Bye.
In the east.